the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
It is the week trending. Lise Hand and Kieran Cunningham are here with me. And you know what? The best way to start the week trending is when the two guests are talking about one of the stories before we start. Even though it might not have been at the top of the agenda, Lise, we're going to talk about the Beatles films that are coming out. So when the guys were cast, and obviously there was a lot of Irish interest because of Barry Keoghan and Paul Mescal straight away as Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney respectively, we thought this was going to be one movie initially. Oh, look, there's going to be a Beatles movie. Instead, they've broken one up for all of the Beatles. And we've got the first proper look of what they're going to look like in their individual biops.
Yeah, we do. And I'm so happy you're starting with this because, you know, it's just nice to start this particular section with something upbeat, which is great. It's Friday. And this is just good news, particularly for anybody who is a mad Beatles fan, because as you rightly say, we're getting four biopics, and they really have kept the lid very tight on this about, you know, how it's going to work. We know it's obviously one for each member of the band. But, you know, when the casting happened, there was a bit of eyebrows were raised. They were like, Paul Mescal as Paul McCartney, not seeing it. But then when they actually released, you know, albeit kind of arty fuzzy stills, you're going, God, yeah, he does look like him. So, you know, there was a huge amount of interest in, you know, how, and Barry Keoghan, obviously, as Ringo. Now, you know, I think there was probably a little help from our prosthetic friend there. So there's no doubt about it. They might have to do a bit of work on him. But, you know, the images look great. And all it is whetting the appetite. But my God, we've got so long to wait. I mean, these four, they're releasing them all together. And not until April 2028. And hopefully it will have stopped raining by then.
I can make no guarantees on that, unfortunately. I think we're 17 days in a row for some parts of the country. But is it important, Kieran, that they look like them? Because I remember watching the Steve Jobs movie that Danny Boyle made. And deliberately, they didn't make Fassbender look a bit like him. And it's funny, when you're watching it, you kind of forget very quickly. Yeah. While the Ashton Kutcher one, he looked almost exactly like Steve Jobs, but it was a terrible film.
Like the Springsteen movie, I didn't think he looked like Springsteen, really. Like he did the hair and he had the build, but facially he didn't. I think it doesn't matter that much, but it helps, definitely helps. And I like the idea they're doing four separate films, because I think a lot of people go through phases. Like myself and Lisa would be big Beatles fans, I think. Only Muhammad Ali, possibly, I've read more books about than about the Beatles. Like, I think I read one or two every year, that you never get tired of them. But I think at the start, when I was really, like, as a kid, Ringo was my favourite Beatle, because he was funny looking, he acted funny, and he bashed things, so kids like him. And then when you kind of become a moody teenager, you love John Lennon, and you think he's a rebel, and then later on you learn things about him, and you're not so sure about him. But it takes you a while, I think, to get it around to Paul McCartney, because he just seems too sweet, too much sweetness and light. But, like, looking back, he was the real genius, the Beatles. But I think they all gel together. I haven't mentioned George. Like, George, you know, just an outstanding musician and a cranky character, as anybody who watched the Get Back documentary. But it's amazing. Like, I have a 33-year-old stepson and a 17-year-old son. And both are mad into the Beatles. And it was never pushed on them. Like, they came on to it themselves. They never said, listen to the Beatles. They could,
were
it's
they
just
on
remarkable.
The house, were they on in the house where they might have got this by osmosis?
No, they could do their own music. They would ignore our music because they just presume it's awful. But so they just discovered themselves. And that's, I find that remarkable, that somebody born in 2008 is mad into the Beatles, and I was born in 1967, and no, I have some excuse, but it's amazing the way they carry, not like Herman and the Herman's Hermits have it endured, or Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Yeah, and I think, though, you're right about one thing. There's so many books have been written and so many movies and documentaries about them, that, you know, the Beatles inspire a level of geekery that is absolutely off the charts. So I think there will be huge scrutiny of the four movies, and people will be saying, oh, are they accurate? Are they, you know, have they taken artistic license? Ringo never said that. George never did that. So it'll be interesting to see how they, you know, how they handle it. Now, Sam Mendes is obviously an incredibly storied director, and, you know, his body of work is fantastic. I mean, American Beauty is probably in one of my, I still remember seeing that for the first time. You know, he's a massively accomplished storyteller and filmmaker. So the project is in great hands. But I suspect as well, because there's such a long lead-in time, that I think by the time they hit the screens, I will predict there's going to be almost like a bank holiday given. You know, there'll be Beatles weekends, Beatles festivals. There'll be new Beatle merch, re-releases of the vinyl, the red album and the blue album and all that kind of carry on. So I suspect we'll come, you know, it'll arrive on a whole crest and wave of Beatle mania, you know, for the 21st century, which would be great fun.
So essentially, Paul McCartney and his estate and so on are the big winners from all this.
Yeah.
They're going to have a re-release.
And like the thing about Paul Maskell is he's a beautiful singing voice.
Yeah.
A really good singer so that's, I'm not sure about the musicianship of the others. I don't know. I think Barry Keoghan was learning the drums. I think I read that a few months ago. So I think they are trying, you know, they don't want them miming like the Monkees or something, you know.
And of course, Saoirse Ronan is playing Linda McCartney.
Mm, yeah.
It's a shame maybe they couldn't find a role for Jessie Buckley, given, that would have been, I was actually racking my brains trying to think, was there something that would you know, a role that would fit her? It depends on what era, I suppose, they're pitching it at. But, you know, given her incredible talent, it'd be wonderful to have her attached to this.
Going on the photos they've released, I wonder, are they doing them, like, say, Paul covers 62 to 64 and somebody else 64, 66. I have a feeling just from the pictures that might be the case.
Yeah, the styles might suggest they're doing different eras, which would be really interesting.
A nice way to make sure everyone watches all four, if you want to carry the story all the way through. Yeah, Paul Mescal's on the hottest of hot streaks. I only got to see Hamlet reasonably recently. They were both brilliant in it and I really, really enjoyed it. I was more emotional than I kind of expected it was going to be. So
I know I love the novel. I haven't seen the film yet, but the novel's amazing.
I'm the same. I just find January way too depressing. Yeah. And I always just surround myself with like nice things, jolly things in January just to get me through the month. So I have that to look forward to next month now.
I watched it on Blue Monday, which is not probably the right day to watch it. The last half hour was hard going and I kind of left the cinema feeling a little bit cold broken emotionally.
My birthday is January 15th and nobody ever wants to go, like when you have a roundy birthday.
Yeah,
they say it's January 15th. And
my birthday was yesterday. I know I couldn't get it.
Yeah, nobody wants to go out. They've seen, I'm not drinking. One of the
dry January. Shocking.
Well, that sets up very nicely for our next story because it has not been dry January. Let's be realistic about this. So 17 days and counting for many places in Ireland. We've had Storm Chandra, which we spoke about earlier on the programme. And I, the thing of it is, Kieran, aside from the rain and the depression of it happening every single day, the reality is when I look at some of the images from Wexford, even South Dublin and Wicklow from earlier on the week and Kilkenny today, this is causing real, real damage, isn't it?
Yeah, and like you look at Enniscorthy and the amount of flooding they've had in the area over the years. It's just shocking. And, you know, there was a bit of deflection over you know, having a go at Met Aaron and not anticipating this. But the big story is the lack of flood defences, because this is happening winter after winter. And our climate is getting wetter. It's getting warmer and wetter. There's no way of getting around that. And there's areas that were never flooded before that are getting flooded now and getting flooded regularly. And a lot of money has to be put into flood defences. And we had a flood from a burst pipe a few years ago. Anybody said to deal with it, it's miserable. It's a horrible experience. That was 3 years ago and we have to get floorboards sorted out in the next couple of weeks. We finally got somebody to sort them out because the damage is so great. And those people that have been flooded many times, like how do they get insurance? Like it's okay, people think, oh, they've got a payout, but you might get a payout once or twice, but if it keeps happening, you won't get it.
Yeah, it's like James Brown was on Southeast Radio. Obviously, this caused a bit of a ripple, his comments. He goes, I'm out here, I need to communicate better, I need to tell us what's happening. I always find it's a bit of a damned if you do and damned if you don't, do you come on this? Because naturally on this show, we talk many times about yellow warnings and orange warnings and whatever else. And we will get WhatsApps and texts that come in on 087-4100-102 and they will say, you're bigging this up too much for a segment, or you're talking about this too much. And now you got the minister saying, he didn't tell us enough.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you're right. You know, it is one of those scenarios. There was a bit of sort of the blame game and the sort of circular firing squad was out in full force, really, with various people, you know, saying, the minister was saying your communication should have been better to Met Aaron. Met Aaron was saying, well, actually, really, flood warnings fall under the aegis of the OPW. It's not really our job. And then I think James Brown, now, I suppose it's particularly close to home in every sense of the word, politically and geographically, obviously because he's a Wexford minister and the South East has been particularly badly hammered And, you know, Enniscorthy, you know, out of all places, Enniscorthy's been absolutely devastated. So, but again, you know, he went on South East Radio and he also said that, Enniscorthy hadn't, the council there hadn't actually yet applied for flood relief, which seemed to come as a surprise to many. And then a couple of the ministers were saying, this comes up all the time in regards to infrastructure, but that judicial reviews are a huge problem, right? Trying to get the critical infrastructure bill to fast track a lot of things like flood defences and so on, they're constantly getting held up. Again, like you see with housing, this is the government's argument now, is that judicial reviews happen like we've seen with laying new Lewis tracks, with housing and so on. And they made the point that putting in flood defences in Enniscorthy, which apparently has really been something that has been coming for 25 years, was delayed because of a judicial review, because somebody objected, because something to do with freshwater pearl mussels.
Right.
So it's not to dismiss people's concerns lightly, but again, this hammers home the point that things get held up, infrastructure gets held up, because the bureaucracy is so laden with red tape that it just holds up everything. So this is another example of that. But, you know, there's no doubt about it that there does, the increasing extremity of the weather is exposing massive gaps in how we actually predict the weather and how we call the weather. I know we're a small island, you know, on the Atlantic, and our weather isn't always predictable. But I get the impression from listening to an awful lot of geologists and experts over the last couple of days that there are measures that could be put in place much more quickly to actually help the situation, like greater use of AI to use as prediction models and so on. So, you know, really, I hope that it's not going to be a case that 7 years' time we're going to be sitting, you know, somebody's going to be sitting here going, aren't the floods dreadful? Why didn't they do something about it?
Yeah. We want to talk about the Cork mayor who admitted to using AI for his speech writing in a moment. But we have a WhatsApp in on 087-4100-102. Lord Mayor, an AI story is how this text begins. It is very sad that this is what the journalist got out of the Cloud CIX event. I was at it. There was so much more to it. The first liquid-cooled supercomputer of its class was deployed in Ireland by Irish companies. And here we are shouting, don't use calculators once again. The fact the journalist also missed was that the speech was written with the help of a European model, not an American OpenAI or ChatGPT. Let's shift the discussion to talk about using AI responsibly, the human overlook, choosing tools where your data is safe, etc. So thanks for that text, which has come in. If you want to kick it off, Lisa, I don't know how you feel about AI being deployed or used, or whether someone should be writing the speech entirely themselves, whether we need to run AI detectors over everything. Where do you stand?
Well, I mean, I'm sort of think that if you're a Lord, in this case, it's the Lord Mayor of Cork, Fergal Dennehy, who's, you know, come into he's hit the headlines for using AI. And, you know, if you're busy and whatever, I mean, it's a tool. It's not the absolute answer to all your prayers, but it is an extremely useful tool. If I was, say, writing a speech, it's extremely useful to pull together thoughts, maybe sort of shape, you know, where you want to go with the speech. But then, you know, you inject your own personality and your own thoughts into it. I mean, it's a tool. It's as much a tool as checking something on Wikipedia or, you know, fact-checking on other sites and, you know, maybe, pulling out a quote or whatever. Like, it's part of the toolkit. And I think that in this day and age, it's perfectly acceptable and you should be using that. You should be acquainting yourself with it. Now, you know, not just to literally throw out a bit of slop out there and just go, actually, that'll be grand. It's formatted nicely and nobody notices the difference. And I mean, personally, as a journalist, you know, that spent many, many years sitting in various halls and so on, listening to dreary, fuzzy, overlong, self-regarding, jargony speeches, I welcome a speech that actually has some clarity of thought and has a sort of a beginning, middle and end to it. So, you know, I think this sort of AI, you know, negative reaction to AI is not good. Fine if you're the point that in the piece that Michael Moynihan was writing, that he was taking exception to this. Of course, if you are in school, you need to learn how to think. You need to learn how to formulate opinions. You need to learn how to think critically. So therefore, just regurgitating something that you put into AI is not good for your brain. particularly when it's in development and you're trying to actually formulate where you stand in terms of principles and values and so on like that. Yeah, no, AI isn't great. But if you're a busy Lord Mayor and you've got five, you know, ribbons to you know, things to open with the scissors and, you know, hands to shake and so on. If you write, you know, if you have a speech erased and I just away with you, no bother.
Kieran, I sat in school when they said you won't have calculators in your pocket when you're older, so you need to learn how to do the multiplication tables.
Yeah.
I think it's still useful to learn mathematics itself without being reliant on it. But here we are with calculators beside us all the time. I don't know. I guess engaging with AI is something people are going to have to do as well. It can't just be seen as a bogeyman the other side of the room and AI is just slop and nothing else.
Yeah, but there are issues like that. There's obviously the environmental impact that and the amount of energy it uses is massive. Projected to consume electricity equivalent to 2 million Irish homes by 2030. And there's ethical issues. And I think this is a big one. Like, say if you spend months on a story, like say Paul Kimmage's investigation into rowing for the Sunday Independent. If you Google, you know, what's going on with Irish rowing and whatever, you will get an AI summary of a couple of hundred words.
Yeah.
And he will get no credit and he will get no payment. And that's generally what people look at. And media outlets are looking at Google, etc., and say, can we get some of the slice of this? Because the amount of people now that when they do a Google search only read the AI summary, they don't go to the primary source. And I think that's dangerous. In my previous job, I was gone, I was off sick for a while. And when I was about to go back to work, I was still getting work emails when I was off. And there was a lot of stuff about AI. You know, you can use AI to summarize press releases, etc. And I had no interest, so I asked my son, you know, show me how does this work? And he says, okay. So he keyed in, you know, write a report on last year's All-Ireland football final in the style of Kieran Cunningham. And I don't know if I have a definable style or anything, but what it had, what it produced was this. It was no joke. It was like, it was a broth of a morning in Dublin, to be sure. The bonny boys of Donegal were dancing jigs and reels up to the Alsaw de Croke Park.
All
so
sounds
it
authentic.
It was just like it made Darby O'Gill and the little people look like a Ken Burns documentary. So if that's the AI, you can have it.
Yeah. I remember we did a quiz downstairs and off the ball once upon a time. We asked them to give us the questions because we thought that AI would be flawless on this because it's only facts. Literally, you can only go and find the facts. And they invented some games. So that was the worry. I think it's one of those things, if you don't, you can use it, but you can't trust it entirely. If you trust it entirely, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And it has really positive uses in medicine and science. Mm. Like it can detect cancers far earlier than was previously the case. So positives to AI.
I saw this week potentially around pancreatic cancer that actually it may well be able to go above and beyond a scan which doctors would look at now, and it can predict potentially growths and so on, which could have huge impacts down the road for patients.
Oh yeah,
and could speed everything up as well.
Exactly. Look, I mean, look, the potential for it, but I think it's so easy to get carried away, and I mean you do hear rumblings, you know, in certain circles, and probably Kieran know more about this, but. You know, talk of AI bubbles and a huge amount of millions, just money that has poured into this and the returns haven't happened yet and people are getting a bit nervous about this. So, you know, it's one of those things that promises a lot. It may deliver or it may fall short. The potential of it is only still really being, you know, people are only getting their head around the potential uses for it and so on. You hear a lot at the moment about vibe coding, which means, you know, people, the sort of arcane arts of coding are much more open now to the likes of, you know, myself, that I wanted maybe to build something, have a look at something, you know, I can now, I have access to it. But I mean, we're only at the start of this. We don't know. It might fade off and become like, what was that thing? The metaverse, that joke. Everybody thought that was the brave new world, turned out to be. So, you know, there's a lot, you know, that's why I'm saying if somebody, a busy politician wants to use it as a part of his or her toolbox to write a speech, but not the whole thing. Fine, that's grand. I've absolutely no problem with that. But
don't put your university thesis in and hope for the best.
Yeah, but I have a couple of friends who work in third level colleges and they say it's a nightmare for them that the amount of students, now they say so it can be 70 or 80% of essays they know are AI now.
And I think in some of them where they're very technical, it can be quite hard to detect if it's AI or not because you're using just phrases and phraseology. So by comparison, say writing an English essay where you could easily tell that AI have constructed this.
And like there's talk at second level and third level of because of that, of moving to oral exams. But that's particularly at second level, a lot of kids aren't comfortable you know, explaining, you know, they're far better at writing what they know about a subject rather than the telling somebody. Like you see that with young journalists, a lot of young journalists don't want to find it hard to phone people they don't know, which is a big part of the job.
Oh, it's gone out the window. Yeah. It's all just WhatsApp now or it's text. And once upon a time when you were trying to get someone on the show and the production team here will know all about this, the best way is getting the phone and just kind of, you know, get the conversation, get it incredibly direct and get an answer. And if that answer is no, you move on. The problem is if you leave a WhatsApp, you're waiting for it to be read. It's almost like Tinder for journalists.
Well, it would be ironic if, you know, this most cutting edge of technology would actually literally propel things like student exams and stuff back to the old Pierre Louis, you know, that they would basically say the only way that we know that they authentically have actually studied and understand what they're doing is to literally have them a pencil and a piece of paper in the room. I mean, it would be ironic if literally this and all this incredible technology literally ended up just everybody pivoting back to analog, you know, literally analog examinations.
I remember having to go to UCD with a pen and scripts and having to write out my exams. So best luck
to
Gen Z.
Up your arm and
yeah, yeah. Gen Z, you can go back in and do exactly what I did. Thanks a million, folks, for joining us for the week trending.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.